nonstop to Cuba on a scheduled commercial flight. It has been a while. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Shortly before 10 o'clock Eastern Time on Wednesday, a JetBlue airplane was set to lift off from Fort Lauderdale, bound for Santa Clara, Cuba. It was the first scheduled U.S. commercial flight to Cuba in nearly a half century. Marketplace's Rima Krace has some details.
Yeah, like you mentioned, David, the plane took off around 9:45 this morning. Anthony Fox tweeted he would be on it, and I'm sure he got a good seat. He's the U.S. Transportation Secretary. Earlier this summer, he approved five other domestic airlines to begin making scheduled flights to the island. And before today, people flying to Cuba had to book charter flights, which can be pretty cumbersome. And just as a reminder, tourists still can't visit Cuba. You need a special reason, like visiting family or for business.
Now, President Obama has been working on normalizing relations with the Cuban government. I guess what we have here is a symbol of that process.
Yeah, it's definitely an important step. Since Obama's decision, we've seen embassies reopen, new business deals, lots of dialogue. And in terms of travel, a boom in the number of Americans taking charter flights to the island. I talked with Michael Bustamante. He teaches Latin American history at Florida International University. And he says these new commercial flights are relatively cheap, at least for now. I'm seeing one-way flights from Florida for $99. He says that's especially important for Cuban immigrants visiting families on the island.
That puts extra money in immigrant communities' pockets, and it makes it so that those families can have that much more cash available to buy the things that their families need and that are still quite difficult to acquire on the island.
Now, JetBlue's initial flights are to lesser-known cities in Cuba. Trips to Havana are expected to come later.
Rima, thank you. Oil fell 1% to below $46 in early trading today. Compare that to a couple summers ago when it was $112. Also, oil companies are not prospecting like they used to. New oil discoveries hit a 70-year low. Marketplace's Scott Tong reports from our sustainability desk.
Oil drillers discovered 2.7 billion barrels of crude last year. That's the lowest since 1947, says energy consultancy Wood Mackenzie. The firm's Julie Wilson says low prices mean companies can only afford to drill about half the exploratory wells than they usually do.
The dip that we're seeing in exploration activity, the dip that we're seeing in discovered volumes, that will come home to roost in a decade.
10 or 12 years is how long it takes to find and drill and deliver oil from a big field. The thing is, global demand then will likely be higher than it is today, even if we assume climate change pledges to cut fossil fuel use. So any shortage would push prices up. Now, skimpy discoveries aren't just because companies are tight-fisted. Their drilling success rate, that is their batting average, is also down. Niels Henrik Bjurstrom is with Rystad Energy in Norway.
You could argue that something that the industry is not doing correctly at the moment.
By the way, discoveries in 2016 are expected to be even lower. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
How can politicians go beyond focusing on the next, say, financial quarter or budget year and think longer term about the promise and pitfalls of policy? The author Kurt Vonnegut once told me that what this country needs is a secretary of the future. Sweden already has one, I found out. Corporations have chief sustainability officers. This election season, we've been looking at what a secretary of the future might do, if we ever got one. Our listeners have been telling us things like environmental sustainability, the future of education, long-term changes in the workforce, and maybe the future of the public bathroom. As we know, bathrooms remain public policy issues even 50 years since they were racially desegregated under federal law and 25 years since buildings had to have wheelchair access. Marketplace's Lewis Wallace today on why a secretary of the future might consider the future of the bathroom.
Let's be real. Public restrooms can be kind of a nightmare.
I will never understand the bathrooms in this country. Why is it that the doors on the stalls do not come all the way down to the floor?
There are the smells, the broken door locks, the gender and body shame.
Well, when you're thinking about the future, one of the things you get to do is dream a little bit.
Laura Noreen is a professor of sociology at NYU who studies shared spaces like bathrooms. She's been thinking about the ideal future bathroom for years, and she has a detailed floor plan.
When you first walk in, you are looking directly, you know, in the distant wall at a changing table and a sink.
Noreen's bathroom of the future has accessible stalls, room for families and caretakers, and it's gender inclusive, but more private with floor-to-ceiling stall doors. pleasantly concealing water sounds emanate from the walls. John Engel with bathroom supply contractor Syntus says hygienic hands-free restroom design is already way ahead of reality.
Wouldn't it be fantastic? You walk in, you don't have to touch the door handle.
In the future, he says there will be smart bathrooms with robotic cleaning functions. But most of that won't be federally mandated. Bathroom laws are usually local laws. The feds get involved when they see a possible civil rights violation, which is exactly what's happening now in North Carolina.
I don't think the Secretary of the Future would have a lot of time to work on this issue.
Mara Kiesling from the National Center for Transgender Equality thinks existing federal law will settle the debate over which bathrooms transgender people use. And separate men's and women's rooms probably won't go away, but she says single-stall restrooms will more likely just be unisex.
We have to have a public conversation about gender-neutral bathrooms.
But Laura Noreen says in a lot of places globally, just having working bathrooms is actually the number one issue.
If I'm thinking about the bathroom of the future, I'm just thinking about bathrooms for more people in the future.
In New York, I'm Lewis Wallace for Marketplace.
We asked you on Facebook for your bathroom of the future ideas. Don't miss the artist renderings of these glorious spaces at marketplace.org right now. Wouldn't it be amazing if you would actually want to rest in a restroom? While you're there, you can check out a link to my conversation with the European Union's competition commissioner on why she is demanding that Apple pay Ireland more than $14 billion in back taxes that Ireland says it doesn't want. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.